again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and lo and behold, Doug Tonis is on a little bit of a vacation break. So I've asked for a pinch hitter to come in, and boy, do we have a 40 home run guy. Kevin Anderson, formerly NBC Sports Chicago. How you doing, brother?
You didn't go with the Ben Gordon off the bench analogy there?
That's what I should have done. Exactly. I was just explaining to one of my good friends, who's now a sophomore, luckily made the varsity, starting as a varsity at St. Edward High School, that I named him after Ben Gordon. And he was unaware of that. And he didn't know who Ben Gordon was, believe it or not.
We need to learn our Bulls history.
Exactly. It's amazing when you think about it, Kevin, how many people don't know, you know, Ben Gordon, even like some of the, you know, Tyrus Thomas even.
It wasn't that long ago, Fred. It was 15 years. It wasn't that long ago.
I know, but if you were 5, 6, 7, now all of a sudden you're in your 20s. It's just amazing how time flies by. But Kevin, I got to tell you, I feel like Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi lately, man. I'm disillusioned, wandering around my house looking at old Jedi texts and Bulls memorabilia.
You've cut yourself off from the Force, is what you're saying?
To see redness is not very bright in me anymore. I mean, a lot of that has to do with, obviously, I think things going to the new network and, you know, the good old days where it was so easy to watch these games. Now I'm going through hoops and, you know, using an antenna. But I guess first, your thoughts on that, like that whole shift. Obviously, you were a big part of the greatness that was NBC Sports Chicago. I'd love to get just a quick statement from you on, like, what do you think about that whole endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, we had an impressive 20-year run. Right. We from 2004 when we started as Comcast Sportsnet Chicago through 2024. September 30th was our last official day on the air with NBC Sports Chicago. And I was with them all 20 years. So, yeah, right now I'm formerly NBC Sports Chicago. I did not go to the new network, CHSN, though we had a lot of people that we know and love, including Jason Goff and Kendall Gill, go to the new network, and certainly Stacy and Adam went as well. So I wish them all the best. I know they are trying to get in as many houses as possible, and they've got a disagreement, if you will, with Xfinity and trying to get on the cable. And I've been lucky because I'm able to watch through the antenna. So I got a digital antenna and have it hooked to the TV, and I'm able to watch that way. But I'm in the city, so I know that not everybody's able to do that, and depending on where you are in the city, if you've got a high-rise next to you, your signal may not be that great, but I know they want to be in as many homes as possible, and I wish them the best. But, you know, for our time at NBC Sports Chicago, I'm biased, but nobody did it better than we did, and I don't know if anybody will ever replicate what we were able to do, you know, covering the Bulls and the other teams during that time.
Can't agree with you more. You guys did an incredible job, and it's missed. I'll just leave it at that. But let's get into the lecture at hand on the beloved Bull. Yeah. And as I said, as you know, kind of like the Luke Skywalker in me, just disillusioned with everything and just frustrated. I think that's probably the best term, is just frustration, that, you know, it's so important this year that this team is bad and we keep that top 10 pick. And
so you're mad that they're winning. You're disillusioned because they're winning too many games.
They put me in this position, though, Kevin. I think you're probably – don't you feel that way, too? It's like, hey, you made this ridiculous, you know, trade in retrospect to keep it top 10 protected. Like, so many of these deals they've done have been top 8 protections or top 10. When you do those type of deals and you don't, you know, really deliver on the assets that are coming in return, obviously, DeMar was a great player for Chicago Bulls, but – I mean, how can we look back and see where we are now and say it was a massive success for the org? It wasn't. I'm just so frustrated that I'm in this position of actually cheering for losses and not really enjoying it when they do have these great victories over Boston at Boston and a game like Milwaukee on Saturday. What say you?
It's this really weird place to be in as a fan, because you're exactly right. Like, we by and large want to see competitive basketball. We want to see the young players develop. Io is having a very good season, and we like what we see out of Giddy, and we'll certainly get into those individual players, I think, in a little bit. But it's a weird place to be in as a fan, that you're rooting for losses. Like, you're rooting for development, and you're rooting for the players to get better and play well, and certain lineups to do good, and guys to increase their trade value. But – that top 10 protected pick in a very solid draft is a major issue with what do you do as a Bulls fan and how do you cheer and who do you cheer for. By and large, you don't want to pay a couple hundred dollars for a set of tickets to go to the United Center and watch the team lose. Like, you don't want to spend 2.5 hours watching a game on a Tuesday night to watch them lose. But at the same time, you want them to keep that pick. And they're in a very Kenny Loggins danger zone right now of not keeping that pick. They're tied for 10th, right? And so with Detroit. And even here's the thing, Fred, you don't even want to get into the lottery with being 10th, because all of a sudden, if a team behind you moves up, you get bumped to 11th. And so, like, you're then rooting in the lottery for no one to move up. And you're, like, rooting, please, stay at 10, stay at 10. And so, like, you want to be in the lottery, be ninth at the very least. Because, like, what happens if a Golden State or Indiana or San Antonio, one of those teams misses the playoffs and they get lucky and move up, and then all of a sudden you don't get that pick? I mean, my God, wouldn't it be the worst if San Antonio ends up in the lottery, moves up to top four, and they're the team that bumps you back to 11 if you finish 10th as the Bulls? That's the worst case scenario. In all the multiverse, that is the worst case scenario. You don't want that to happen. But you're right, it's tough for a Bulls fan. I mean, when you watch games right now, are you rooting for individual players but still have the loss at the end of the game?
I would say I'm rooting for the young guys to perform well. And again, the feeling is frustration in that Vucevic is playing like an all-star. And, you know, he's a great dude. Everybody loves him. But my God, where was this last year? Where was this the year before? Yeah. All you needed to do was shoot 40% from three in any of those years. And, you know, the benefits of that, bringing out the bigs, opening runways for DeMar, for Zach, are there. But he was awful last year. He literally went from, like, the worst three-point shooter in high volume, wide open threes last year to, you know, one of the best in the league. And that's where again, the feeling of frustration. Like, dude, you couldn't have done this last year. Like, this is the year you break out. And I know a lot of people have compared this to 2017-18. I'd love your thoughts on this, you know. And that was a year when, obviously, Nico starts out, gets punched out by Bobby Portis, Bulls start out 3-17. And then he comes back for 25 games and just plays lights out and, you know, basically helps them win seven. I think they won seven in a row that year when they were trying to lose for the tank for Luka. And everybody's like, oh, it's just like that year. And I would counter, it's nothing like that year. Because that year, the other big impetus for the team doing so well was a rookie named Lauri Markkanen, who was first team all rookie. There's nothing like that with this team. This team's and as another counter, you were able to turn Nico into a first round draft pick. This team, the impetus for it has been Zach and Vooch, who aren't even part of your plans, and they've already played beyond 25 games. So we still haven't traded. You know, we still haven't moved off of these guys, and they're the primary impetus. It's not the young guys that are really pushing this move. I guess you could possibly make the argument that Io and Kobe are, but to me, it's unequivocally Zach and Vooch, and they're not in the future plans. They're just causing more pain the better they're playing. You know, at least that you might say, well, at least they've moved up to tradable status, but again, still hasn't happened. What say
so,
you?
Wait, so Fred, are you saying you're mad because Vucevic and LaVine are playing so well this season?
I don't know. I'm Luke sitting in the tablet looking at the scrolls, thinking of torching the whole thing. That's where I'm at.
So you're actually, in a way, rooting for Vucevic. Why can't you be like last year, right? In a sense, LaVine, why can't you miss more games, Zach? Like, those guys can't win, right? They can't win with the fan base.
Well, I thought they did win if they moved to tradable status, but they're still on the stinking roster. Like, well, is it possible? Let's start out with that, because that was like the first like question I had. Do you think these guys are at a tradable status where Vooch, first of all, do you think they're going to be moved? Number one, most importantly, or is it just too difficult to do in this collective bargaining environment?
If I had to lean one way or the other, I think both will be traded before the deadline. So, like, first off, to kind of answer your concern where we are in late December right now, I'm not concerned that they are still on the roster. The trade market historically in the NBA doesn't truly get movement until you get to late January and February. Like, yes, do you have big moves that happen in December occasionally? Yes, but they are usually the exception and not the rule. Teams need to figure out exactly who they are, what they are, and what they need to make a playoff push. And so, like, when I look at the Western Conference specifically, there are two teams I see there that are historically very good teams in the NBA that right now are not going to host a playoff series that could use shooting. And that's the Denver Nuggets and Golden State Warriors. But both those teams can use shooting. Vooch is having a career year shooting-wise. Is it sustainable? Probably not. But the guy's hitting over 45% of his threes, which is just absolutely incredible. Teams can use a big like that that can spread the floor. He's also a very good playmaker, as we know. His salary is not as difficult to move as Zach LaVine's, which is good. Vooch is only making $20 million. Zach's making $43 million. So Zach becomes a little bit more difficult given the current environment with the CBA and the restriction on salaries and moving it. I think Zach could help a lot of teams. I think specifically I look at the Orlando Magic and what's the one aspect of their team, of their game, that they sorely need more of. That's three-point shooting. Like they badly need it. Like they can't compete in a series with Boston or New York or Cleveland right now. They can't. Like are you going to win a first round series against Atlanta or Miami or Indiana if you're Orlando? Yeah, you could, but you're not getting past those other teams in the East with how your shooting is right now. It's just not consistently there. I mean, Boston has built the blueprint for how you win in today's modern NBA, and that's a completely different discussion of whether that's good or bad for the viewers or for the fans or for the players, right? But Orlando badly needs shooting, and I think at some point, like whether they realize it or not, they're going to have to go out and get it. And it's not going to happen through the draft right now. You know, they've got some really good players and they've been dealing with injuries this year to a couple key guys, which has hurt them, but they could use Zach LaVine. They absolutely could use Zach. And then I look at, you know, again, Denver and Golden State, they can use shooting too. You know, those teams going to be able to, compete in the West right now with Oklahoma City and Dallas, even the Clippers and Minnesota. Yeah. The West is kind of weird right now. Like with how the teams are kind of lined up 1 through 10. But every team can use shooting. The Zach's salary just makes it harder. But I think as you get into later in his contract, yes, his salary goes up a little bit, but I think you get then teams are going to be okay taking it on. I think honestly, Zach's peak trade value is probably going to come next summer. But I think there's a decent chance, because he's motivated and because the Bulls are motivated to move him, I think there's a decent chance that he could get moved by this trade deadline. I'd say, let me handicap it this way for you, Fred. I think there's a like 2-to-1 chance that Vooch gets moved. I think like a 5-to-1 chance that Zach gets moved.
Yeah, interesting. What I find frustrating too about this front office is that third year for Vooch just makes it all the more hard to move him. And they didn't need to add that. Like, who was giving him 3-year deal? Like, make a team option. And then he's absolutely traded. I still think it's hard to move him. You know, I still think there's teams out there that look at Vucevic. I think he would be valuable if it was an expiring deal this year. But he's still owed $20 million for next year.
Yeah, but
and
like,
I don't
think... Here's the thing. He's owed $21.5 million. But in today's NBA, that's like for a starting center, even a guy in your rotation, 21.5 is not a lot of money. It's crazy money when you say it out loud, talking to you and I. But when it comes to the percent of the salary cap and the cap going up, I don't think that number is prohibitive to move and trading for him. I don't think another team is going to look at Vooch and go, man, we really can't afford to take on that salary. I think the barrier in him getting traded last year with his performance on the court. And that's clearly not an issue right now.
It's not an issue right now. But I do feel there are teams out there who are saying, well, this guy was awful last year. And he still is bad on the defensive end. He can't protect the rim. There's still, you still have to have a really good perimeter defense around him to make it work. I still think there's a lot of teams out there that would have said, all right, we'll take him on if it was expiring. But so many of these teams are at the first or second apron. $20 million next year, I agree with you. It doesn't sound like a lot, and it isn't for a starting quality center. But it is if you're at that apron. Like, there are other moves you might need to do as a contender, and you might not be willing to take on a 35-year-old who'll be 35. And if you don't really believe that he's going to continue at this pace, I don't either. Like, he's shooting 30% from three in his last four games. I think this is completely unsustainable. I hope it is. I hope I'm wrong. But I think he'll probably finish the year, you know, somewhere between 37, 40. Still very good compared to where he was. But I think there's a lot of teams that would say, I'm not sure I want to bring this guy in at $20 million next year when I don't believe he's going to continue at this unsustainable level of play. Yeah. I hope I'm wrong in that.
You mean he's got flaws. Like, if you're going to trade for him, a team's got to believe that Vooch is that one piece that's going to get him deeper into the playoffs, right? Now, is that because of an injury you have to a guy in your roster and you want to make a push this year? Is it because you just feel like you need more size and more shooting off the bench? Maybe. Like, that's up for each individual team to decide. But you're right, he's not a good defender, but he is a good playmaker, and he's having a career year shooting-wise, and I think any team that would trade for him would hope that would continue. But you are absolutely right. If he was an expiring deal, it would make it easier to do.
Yes. But I think he would have been traded already. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's the problem. And also, what else is the problem is that it's not really Denver that's dominating in the West anymore. If Denver was the team and the clear, all roads go through Denver, I think it would have been more likely, because Vuchkin is a good kind of counter, or a good answer, at least, especially this year, to, you know, getting through Jokic. The West is such a, it's so much so much more difficult to win there. And I just feel like the status of all these collective bargaining agreements, these contracts. So let's, like, just to point out, Miami just announced they're not trading Jimmy Butler. The reason they're not trading Jimmy Butler is because, in my opinion, they can't. They can't. There's no team. If you look around, Houston already said they don't want him. And I believe it. They got, why would they bring in Jimmy Butler and move a lot of their great young assets for a guy who's 35, who's going to probably take a player option 52 next year, demand, cause more problems? That's the last thing you need. And he's done. Eventually, everybody gets to a level where you're not valuable anymore. And Jimmy Butler's at that level. So the Heat would rather have him play this out and open up all that cap space and allow for other moves than take in bad contracts or questions or commitments that I just don't think are there. And I think that's kind of what's working against LaVine is, you know, this Denver deal. I think they want him, but do the Bulls want that in return? Michael Porter Jr., he's a bigger question mark health-wise than Zach LaVine. Yeah, he's 3 years younger. He can't create his own shot. He's a good shooter, but so is Zach LaVine. Like, how's that a win for the Bulls taking on that and that horrible Zeke Nagy contract? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, is you're taking in so much of these dollars, and I just think it's really hard to make that kind of thing work. The one team that had that was the Lakers, and they just made the trade, obviously, for Dorian. So I think that's gone now. I don't know. What say you with Zach? Like, did you? First of all, I'd like to get your opinion on that Denver trade. If you were the Bulls, would you have done that trade for Michael Porter Jr.?
No, I wouldn't. Like, I'm not at a point, to me, in which it's get Zach off this roster no matter what. Like, I don't think you sell pennies on the dollar or you take on a bad contract to just to get rid of Zach. Like, Zach's having a very good season. He's staying healthy. He's shooting great. Like I don't see the, like, I know there are people in the camp of trade Zach no matter what. I'm not in that camp. He's still a very good player. Now, the problem is, as you said a few minutes ago, he's winning you games right now. And that's probably not a good thing if you want to keep that pick. But one interesting thing, though, when it comes to Denver, you talked about, like, the motivation for a team if Denver was better to get Vooch. Denver has an issue right now with their roster in which when Jokic is on the bench, they're getting killed out there. Like, it just, they're losing those minutes, and it's not. What if they brought in Vooch to be their backup to Jokic? Like, he plays a semi-similar style of game. It's not obviously a clone, But if I'm Denver, I take a more serious look at trading for Vooch and not LaVine in that aspect of it.
Interesting.
I think that could very help them in their style of play and getting, like, if you have Murray bridge that gap a little bit, get Jokic some rest. I think Vooch would be good on Denver. I think he'd be very good on Denver.
My counter to that, I think that would be a nightmare defensively with Vooch and whoever you bring in. If you're Denver and you're moving an asset out, you want them to be able to play with Jokic. I don't think those two can play together.
I agree. No, you would not play them together. This would be a kind of expensive backup.
So I just think that if I'm Denver, I don't make that deal just because you want Jokic on the floor as much as possible. I agree with you. That's a major issue, but I'd look elsewhere. And I think Zach LaVine would be he would be awesome next to Jokic. I really believe that. And he'd be a great fit there, as with most players in the NBA, right? Next to that guy. But, you know, I think that's the best move. Just they got to figure out how to make it happen. And I would take on Michael Porter Jr. as long as that second contract is, as long as you had something of value, not, you know, Zeke Nagy's, that's a albatross of a contract. That's, you know, that's like, that's something we wouldn't, that's like a Felicio. That's something we don't want. Yeah. So, that's not a good deal for Chicago Bulls.
Well, real quick, the other issue with Denver, if they were motivated to get Vooch, is there really a player in return or players in return the Bulls would want off that roster at that price? Like, they're not trading Aaron Gordon. And like you said, Zeke Nagy, Sarge, you know, the DeAndre Jordan, the guys that are going to have to be filler. I don't know necessarily the Bulls are going to want to take on two or three contracts just to get rid of Vooch.
Exactly. The last thing you need to be doing is taking in these type of contracts. I call them the Aminu contracts. Like, that's the under-discussed part of that Orlando trade that was horrendous. Is you had to take on Aminu, who was out of the league after he was out of the Bulls. I mean, the guy sucked. You get that albatross contract, and it doesn't seem like a lot. It's only $10 million. But then you're forced to move Thad Young in order to just get him off the roster to San Antonio, who then turned Thad Young into a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Like, those kind of moves kill you. They absolutely kill you, having those type of contracts on your, especially in this environment. So yeah. I want no part of it, and they got to stop doing stuff like that. I do want to get into, I was debating this with the GOAT, Will Gottlieb, about who is a Bulls current most tradable asset. I think it's pretty clear who the one and two are, but I'd love to get your opinion on like one, two, and three in terms of the 29 other GMs in the league, and they're come calling. Who is the guy that's probably going to return the most just based on contract and performance?
Number one is Ayo Dosunmu, in my mind. I think given his contract, which is probably the most team-friendly deal in the entire NBA in terms of production and what they're currently getting paid right now, it's Ayo. He's only making $7 million. I mean, that's incredible for the season he's having, for the improvements that we've seen on both ends of the floor. To me, it's Ayo. Like, it just, he's, you know, like his numbers don't pop out and scream all-star. He's only averaging just over 12.5 points per game. But like, he's a really good defender. To me, Ayo is probably number one in terms of most tradable players on the Bulls who would get the most return, and a large part of it is because of the salary he's currently making. Like, that is just a huge part of the league and the landscape of the NBA right now is, you know, value for what their production is. Number two, probably to me, is probably Kobe, right? Like, Kobe is still under a very team-friendly deal. It's $12 million, which, given his production, is probably second to Ayo around the league in terms of team-friendly deals. It's funny, Fred. Like, this front office has taken a lot of flack, and they've made some significant mistakes, and guys haven't developed. But Kobe and Ayo, a testament to not only Donovan's staff and the development and the work ethic of those two individual players, but they're also under extremely team-friendly deals and what they're making. And the front office got those done. So, like, you know, for those who want to just complete hate on this front office, and they are not flawless by any means, the deals they got done for both those players are absolute A-plus home runs for that. And then number three is interesting. Because you had asked me about Patrick Williams offline before we got started. And I think he's making too much to consider him a really tradable aspect, given that we need to see consistent production from him, which we're just not getting for what he should be paid. But at the same time, he is who he is. He's shooting nearly 38% from three. Like, he's a solid role player, and $18 million, that's not that bad, and he's under that contract for a while. Number three is tough for me. I probably would have to go Buzelis, just because he's got so much potential, and he's under, obviously, first year of a rookie deal. So in terms of tradable assets, I think Buzelis would have to be third.
I agree. I do disagree a little bit with who I think the most tradable asset would be.
You would go Kobe?
I would go Kobe, just because his offensive ceiling is higher. They're about the same age. They're really not that different in age. I do agree that there's no doubt Io is a better all-around player in terms of he's much better defensively. But I think Kobe's proven to be – he's just a better shoot. I trust his shooting a little bit more, especially in the long term. And he's just a more versatile elite scorer. The guy's he's just got it when it comes to that. I know he struggled a little bit recently after an ankle injury. Like, hello, some type of correlation there why he struggled recently. You know, he was basically putting up the same numbers he was a year before that injury. But, you know, big picture, and he's such a high, they're both high character players, so they're both good players. I would push back a little bit with you on, you know, the front office gets a lot of criticism, and absolutely they freaking should. Like, they got really lucky with Kobe. They didn't want Kobe White. They got lucky because the timing worked out perfectly. They were able to play hardball with him. They were trying to trade that guy for years. They didn't know what they had there. They asked him to shift roles. Every time I brought this up with Will Perdue on Monday, every player I talk about in the NBA, one of the big things they always mention is, I want to know what my role is with the team. You think about Kobe White since he was drafted. He was asked to be a traditional point guard in his first full season after, you know, doing really well as a rookie last nine games before COVID, averaging 25 points a game. Then he goes, all right, we don't want you to be a traditional point guard. We're going to bring in Ball. We want you to be our sixth man. Excels in that role, especially in the following season after they brought in Goran Dragic to replace him, etc. And then, you know, his last season, Zach gets hurt. All right, we want you to be the primary ball handler and a scorer, and he excels in that. And then what do the Bulls do? They bring in Josh Giddey. We want you to go back to be off ball again, not the primary ball handler, just be a shooting guard right next to, you know, or slash shooting guard wing next to, you know, Zach LaVine. It's just like role, year after year, different role. I never thought this front office believed in Kobe, and obviously he was already here when they took over. Io, they played hardball with him, but why didn't you do that with Patrick Williams? Why didn't you do that with Vooch? Like, it's crazy. Yes, because you played hardball with Io, you got him on a great deal. Do that with Patrick Williams. There was no reason to do what they did, but you know, regardless, I don't want to get on that. I just get nauseous the more we talk about it. Let's go. You mentioned Modest, who I agree with. I like your thoughts on him as a player, though. So far, like, I do agree, he's a third best tradable asset just because he's shown enough and he's so young and he's on obviously a rookie deal and he will be for several more years. But I'm not sold that he's like a slam dunk like a lot of people are. What say you on Modest Buzelis?
I mean, he's a rookie. He's 30 games into his first season in the league. There is nothing that should say to anyone that he is a bust or that he's going to be an all-star one day. Like, either way, you can't make sweeping judgments like that 3 months and 2.5 months in to a kid's rookie season. Have we seen these flashes of athleticism and things that make you go, okay, I like that, that's nice? And have we seen things that go, man, that was a bad play? Yes, we've seen both, right? Like, he's not getting consistent minutes. I mean, this entire rookie class is a very weird class. But he's averaging 13 minutes a game, and he's 30 games into his rookie season. Like, the numbers aren't going to tell you anything from that small sample size. Does he care? Yes. Is his work ethic behind the scenes seem to be pretty good? Yes, as well. But he's not somebody that I would go, oh, let's trade him. You know, he may be technically the third best asset on this roster right now, but I'm not looking to completely blow it up. Does he need to get more minutes consistently? Does he have to earn those minutes? Absolutely. And I would like to see what a post-trade deadline roster looks like for several guys and what they can do if they get increased minutes, including Bezelis. And honestly, even getting back to Kobe, I would love to see what Kobe would be able to do with more shots consistently in this roster. You know, like he's – yes, yeah, yeah. Like he – I want to see him average 17 to 20 shots a game, like Kobe, right? Like I want to see him be that guy, and I think he can be that guy. But Bouzelis – like, I'm put it this way, with Bouzelis, I'm not either disappointed or I'm not overly excited by what I've seen from him so far. I think he's shown moments that he can be a solid NBA player, but he's got to get those minutes and just learn and get better. And it'll take at least into year two before I think anybody, whether you're a basketball observer or in the league itself, to go, all right, this guy is gonna be something, play a 10-plus year career.
Kevin, I just texted the home office to keep the bus out a little bit longer. You okay for going a little bit longer?
With absolutely. They tell the home office sweet. Thank you for that.
Great. Sounds good.
Fred, so, you and I could talk Bulls and NBA for like a couple hours. We never have that amount of time.
Exactly. Great. So I got two more big ones. And this is I'm going to take a little detour here on our pre-planned route. I want to get into Josh Giddey. Obviously, he had an incredible game on Saturday. I think it's been a roller coaster season for the kid. You know, like I've been pretty public on my thoughts. I thought the trade was an abomination not to get any draft assets in addition.
It's quite the word, abomination.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so much on Giddey. He ended the season as a bench player who was benched and asked to be a bench player going forward. And we didn't get any draft assets from the team that has too many to use, which is insane to me. But that said, it's not a reflection on him. Obviously, everyone knew he was a great passer, a great rebounder, but he struggled with his shot, struggled with his defense, and that's exactly what we've seen here in Chicago. Saturday was something different, though. I mean, obviously, incredibly clutch, just an incredible performance, just outstanding for a young kid, and I hope this is something that kind of parlays into something greater. I guess, number one, I'd love your initial thoughts on Josh Giddey, but more importantly, let's assume he just finishes the season, you know, at a pretty good level, and kind of, again, on a roller coaster path. Some great games like we saw yesterday, but some really poor ones like we saw earlier in the year. What are you doing with him as a restricted free agent? What would you advise the front office to do?
Well, first off, congratulations to Alex Caruso for getting paid by Oklahoma City. I mean, the guy is got his deal, got what he deserved. No longer going to be a $9 million a year guy. He's going to be $20 million a year guy. So first off, congratulations to AC as being part of that abomination of a trade, as you put it, with that.
From our perspective. From that Oklahoma City. Good for, it was a great
good for
deal.
AC. Good, we're great for great for Oklahoma City. Like, I would put the Thunder as my favorites to win the title right now.
I agree. Yes, absolutely.
At the very least, come out of the West. The beating Boston is going to be really tough. So getting back to Giddey, he, to borrow from Danny Green, he is who we thought he was. Like, I'm not like surprised at all by what we've seen from Giddey this year. Like, he is as advertised. The guy is an incredible playmaker, as you just alluded to. Just got his second triple double of the season. He obviously is a very good rebounder, incredible court vision, incredible passer, a average to below average defender. Though he had a really nice defensive possession late in that game. And a average to below average shooter. There's no surprises right now from what we've seen from Giddey. But to a point you just made a few minutes ago, Giddey's inclusion on the roster means that Kobe has to shift a little bit to what he's doing. And that means Kobe and Zach and Giddey on the floor at the same time. My biggest concern with the three of them, as we entered the season three months ago, was that three of them are not good defenders and that they are awful defensively collectively, which they are, and that Giddey is not as effective off ball on offense. And so what do you do with those three players who need to have a higher usage rate and score? So the question is it important to move off Zach for Giddy and Kobe's development? Probably, long term with this. But in terms of Giddy, he's back into the role which he was his first couple years in Oklahoma City, being the primary ball handler. He's averaging 7 assists a game, which is actually a career high for him with this team right now. And so you get to the end of the season. He's a restricted free agent coming off his rookie contract. I think probably if you're the Bulls, you're not disappointed by what you've seen from Giddy, so you're not going to go, we're going to let him walk. They're in a kind of a tough spot where you almost need to kind of validate that trade you made with the Thunder. And I think if there's anything remotely fair that you either – so he signs an offer sheet with somebody and you match it, or you just do what you do with Vooch and just sign him outright at the start of free agency. I think like Giddy is a piece, and I like what I've seen from him in terms of what I expected to see, and he's what I expected on defense as well, and he's what I expected shooting as well. Like he has upside, he's got potential to get better, but I don't think his ceiling is like, I don't think he has an all-star level ceiling. I don't think we're going to be looking at a situation in which Giddy, we're going to be like, wow, 5 years from now, he's a two-time all-star, and we expected that. Like, that's just not who he is. He doesn't score enough and doesn't shoot well enough to earn that role.
Do you feel if he was, let's just assume they let him become a restricted free agent, like, what would you think he'd get on the open market this offseason, this upcoming offseason?
It's tough to say with the current CBA, like, what teams are going to want for him on the roster, like, what they're willing to pay. I'd say this is going to be a wide range. I think on the low end, it would be what Kobe got paid this last year at 12. And I think on the high end would be maybe 19 to 20. Like, and that's a really wide range. I'd have to, like, ask me that question as we get into June, and I'll have a better sense of what the free agent market looks like and what teams could be looking at to add him. I mean, certainly if you're going to sign Giddy, you're going to want him to be your starting point guard, like, bottom line, right? A starting point guard in this league, you know, is going to go for around 20 at the bottom end. But he does have flaws in his game. Now, if he could get his 3-point shooting consistently up to like 36%, he'd be a lot more teams going after him. Yeah. Like at 33, it's just not there. It just needs to be a little bit more for teams to go like, okay, you're worth 20 to 22 instead of 14 to 16.
Yeah, I think Doug, or, you know, Doug Tonis always talks about he needs to bulk up and become like a point forward, kind of like, you know, what Luka is, because, you know, you kind of are what you guard. You can't guard any point guard in the league. But I do feel like if he can bulk up a little bit and get stronger, and that's a big weakness that he has, then he could guard, you know, fours, threes. He's big enough to do that. Rebounds well enough to do that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, but you make a good point, because if he could improve one of the two other weaknesses in his game, and those are 3-point shooting and defending. If he could improve either one of those by a marginal amount, you're right. Like I think the comp, it's not really fair that some people like to use on Giddy's like a little Ben Simmons light with that. Simmons, when he wants to play, is an incredible defender.
Absolutely.
You know, so
first, like, team all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even a remotely good comparison.
Obviously, the reason some people make that comparison is because it's a taller guard that can rebound and credible playmaker. And that's obviously fair between those two aspects. But I think, you know, summing up your question, I think the Bulls probably do re-sign him and restricted free agent. I think they probably match any offer sheet he gets, because I don't think anyone's going to go out and give him a crazy offer sheet of like $25 million per year. I don't think that's going to happen. So if he gets 16, 18, even 20, I think the Bulls match it and have him be your starting one and Kobe your starting two, you know, for the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think if the Bulls are smart, they'll look out ahead and see very few teams have cap space. Very few teams are going to be willing to offer him a lot of money. Have him be a restricted free agent. Go out. Go ahead. Get your best deal. And he'll find that there isn't one out there. And use this club, which is what restricted free agency is. Use that club that, like they did with Io, and get him on a team-friendly deal. That's the way to play it. I doubt he'll say, all right, well, I'll just play out, you know, take the qualifying offer. I don't think that would happen. They should be able to come to some type of agreement, which I think is fair, which is somewhere between 15 and 20 million per year. But once you get that commitment from him, extended commitment, you have to address your interior defense and have a rim protector for him. You cannot play him with Vooch. I mean, your defense is guaranteed to be bottom five in the league if you have Vooch and Giddey out starting in games. It just is, you know. So he's a guy that you're going to have to surround with the right type of players. And I guess that's where my biggest frustration was, is I thought he had those right type of players around him in Oklahoma City, and it didn't work. So I hope it changes here somehow, and I think you've touched on it. It changes with him becoming a better three-point shooter. Finally, last question I wanted to get into is, this is something I've been talking a lot about, is my comparisons between the Bulls front office and the Bears front office.
Oh, Lord.
I think there's a ton of them. Did you hear this? Did you ever hear me lay this out?
I have not heard you lay this out.
Okay. All right, let's do it. I want to get your thoughts on each point that I'm about to make. So number one, the similarity, big one, is like, it, obviously Acme hired in 2020 and Poles hired in 2022. I think their zenith as free agent, as a front office, was like about 2 years in. So 2 years into Acme was, I think their zenith was that winter / spring of 2022, when, until Ball got hurt, Caruso got hurt. Even then they were playing pretty well till about February, and then things just went downhill, straight downhill after that. I think the same thing with Poles, where, you know, in 2022 hired, and their zenith was probably 4-2 or the summer of 2024, and things have been straight downhill since. So that's number one. But number, would you agree that those were kind of like the same timelines, 2 years in?
Yes, things were looking very good. Yes, in terms of that, yes, that's fair.
And I think you would agree too, as someone who was, you know, knee deep in this, people loved Acme in the beginning of 2022 when they were in first place. This worked. They signed Ball, signed Vooch, signed, you know, got the Rosen. You remember January, right, when they had Ball and all that was going really well.
They were,
right?
first in place. The Eastern Conference, Fred. They were first in the East at that
point. It's
hard
to believe.
Yeah. Those like 4 months in, like before that injury, like this, you could have told any Bulls fan, man, we're gonna win. Like with that group that they had at that time, they were gonna be like perennial Eastern Conference title contenders, if not more. Like they were just, everything was clicking. So yes, the optimism was sky high in mid January of that year, and it's never been anywhere close since then.
Exactly. So similar timelines, you're in agreement with me there. The second thing I would add similarities are, they just traded a ton of draft assets for these type of players that in the end didn't get them to where they needed to be. Mm-hmm. So you look at the Bulls, they traded 3 first round picks for Vucevic, DeRozan, and 2 second rounders essentially after the penalty for Ball. And then the Bears traded 2 second rounders in Claypool and Sweat. For Claypool and Sweat, they traded a 4th rounder for Keenan Allen, 5th rounder for Bates, 6th rounder for Travis Taylor. They just sent a ton of draft assets out for these players that, you know, although good, some of them good, they didn't really move the needle when you get down to it. So that's another similarity. My biggest similarity, though, is this one. I'd love your opinion on it. What do you think the best move of Acme in the last 4 years has been?
Oh, the absolute best. This could be signing. It could be draft pick.
Signing, draft, whatever it is. Yes, correct. I think the number one is clear to me. Although there, I think the Io draft pick and the Rosen trade, you might be able to make an argument. I don't think you can make it anymore, but with the knowledge of where we went with them. What was the best signing? I would say it's a signing. I would say it's a signing because it was a tradable asset. I think it's the Caruso signing.
Yes. I will say that the DeMar DeRozan era worked out better than I think anybody would have hoped for the Bulls in terms of what they got out of DeMar. But the best singular move they made was signing Caruso. Yes, because in terms of the production they got out of AC, given his contract at the time, it's probably the best move that has had the most impact on winning that they've made during that time. I agree with you.
And so the point, the similarity between this move and Poles is, and I think you would agree the best move with Poles was the trade which got us Caleb Williams with the Carolina Panthers.
The initial year one trade that got them DJ Moore.
Yes. That eventually became, yes, 100%. Exactly. So the similarity between the two front offices is that both of those moves were completely due to the incompetence. The success of those moves was due to the incompetence of other orgs. The Lakers, Caruso wanted to re-sign with the Lakers. They were too dumb and too cheap to pay him. Yep. That was his first choice. He even agreed to take less money, and they said no. So the Bulls took advantage of that. Great, but that's your best move, was completely dependent on the Lakers' incompetence. That Carolina trade, the Carolina Panthers were 7-10 when they made that trade. For them to go 1-16 in the subsequent year takes another level of incompetence. When you have zero incentive to lose and they go 1-16, the odds of that are astronomical, and they somehow screwed that up. And so, like, that, what are we saying today if we don't have Caleb Williams? What happens if the Carolina Panthers merely won 5 games after that deal? Then we don't have Caleb Williams. We don't have Jaden Daniels. We don't have anything. You know, we might have Alt, I guess, as a left tackle, but just think about that. So there's another similarity there. And then, so I think you would agree. It sounds like you agree those are the two best moves.
Yes. Yeah. If individual for the Bulls, it's AC. And for the Bears, it's not even close. It's the initial trade with Carolina. Yes. 100%.
I can't wait to hear this one now, because this is my there's two more. who do you think the best player on the Bulls is today? The best, not most tradable asset. Who's the best player?
I mean, Zach LaVine's the best player on the floor on a given
game. Amen. Who's the best player on the Chicago Bears?
Oh. Wow.
This season. I think it's pretty clear. I think he'll make a Pro Bowl. He's a defender. Like, who's the best defensive player on the team?
I mean, who's Jalen Johnson? Yeah.
It's Johnson.
Right? It's not Tyreek. Yeah.
Both of those guys were already here. Both of those guys were products of the previous front office. And, you know, I agree, like, Johnson's not going to be the best player in 4 years or 5 years. I'm just talking about right now. They were both already here after all this time. Two guys that were here when these front offices took over. And yet, after all these similarities that I pointed out, here's the last one that really is the punch in the gut. They're both going to be allowed to do this rebuild. Like, I think Yakin's going to be here.
Are they? Is the Hallis Hall front office going to stay the same?
So this is where you disagree with me on? So you feel like they're going to fire Poles?
I think there is. Now, I don't have any inside knowledge at the Bears, but I think given how badly things have gone for that team this season, they are an embarrassment on the field.
Yeah.
They're gonna finish the year losing 11 straight. They have gone through coach after coach, and not just head coach, but coordinators. They've had to fire two coaches for embarrassing situations. They've gone through how many offensive coordinators, how many defensive coordinators with the shuffle of this past season. I mean, you're going to get to a situation in which Caleb next year is going to be working with his fourth offensive coordinator in just over a season. That's embarrassing. And given the issues they've had this year are largely self-inflicted through roster building and coaching staff, I wouldn't put it as a absolute given that the Bears front office is back. I think Kevin Warren's going to take a look at the situation, and I think he's going to seriously consider cleaning house and lining up a head coach and a GM to be under the same contract, which I think is the smart thing to do in the NFL, because that way you don't get a GM who gets a pass because the coach did well and a coach that gets a pass because the GM didn't bring in the players that he wanted. I think you line them up. I think that would be the smart thing to do. So I don't think it's absolute given that this Bears front office is back. I agree with the Bulls. I do not see any situation in which the Bulls front office other than Eversley leaving on his own terms to go somewhere else. But as we know, it's Karnišovas who's really making the calls within that front office. I don't see there's any way he's not back next year. So that part I do agree with.
I agree with you. That would be the smart thing for the Bears to do. I disagree. I don't think they'll fire him. I think they're going to give him another chance to hire a new coach, even though he passed on Kevin O'Connell. Didn't even interview him. Didn't even interview him. He hired, you know, Matt Eberflus.
Or Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh.
That's on Warren. That's on Warren. That's inexcusable, too. Both of these guys. Like, I can't even believe it. This is, again, I'm Luke in my hut here looking at my Bears stuff, too, also. you know, but want to burn the Jedi text and everything else to the ground. The two other points I forgot to mention that I'd love your take on the final few minutes. They also failed to kind of, like, properly evaluate the talent that was here. Like,
yeah.
If you look at the Bulls, let Laurie walk for basically nothing. The Bears let Montgomery walk for a contract that is better than Swift. There were that's a little bit less of an example. But I also think the most under talked about thing was these huge moves that they both made, these big swings, were only available because they had really good players on bargain deals. And so what I mean by that, in the Bulls case, they had Zach LaVine was underpaid when he took over. For the first 2 years, he was an all-star player playing on $19 million a year with that, you know, Sacramento contract that we matched. So it's a lot easier to make these big swings for Vucevic and DeRozan when you got a player of that quality on a bargain deal. Then when he gets paid in the summer of 2022, suddenly it's a lot tougher to make those deals and make some really, you got to make every right move on the margins. In the Bears case, this guy took over, regardless of what you think of Fields, he was a quality quarterback on a rookie deal. What are you going to do when you have to pay Caleb Williams $50 million a year? Like,
yeah, well, that's the entire NFL right now. The entire NFL is built around trying to win under a quarterback under his rookie contract.
Yes, you've wasted 4 years of competent quarterbacking on rookie deals. Maybe in Fields' case, not as competent as Caleb Williams, but you've wasted. I mean, what he did to Fields in his second year. It was Pohl's first year, I think, is, you know, inexcusable. I mean, that offensive line, the best offensive lineman on that team was Tevin Jenkins. And you could make the same argument. He could arguably be the best offensive lineman on this team. He had a fifth rounder playing left tackle. It's appalling. It's just appalling. And yeah, again, I'm Luke Skywalker. Well,
Fred, get back to like the really good point about not properly evaluating the talent you inherited. Isn't Roquan Smith a perfect example?
I agree 100%
for the Bears.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Don't you feel that way too? Like, how can we look at this roster and say Roquan Smith? I never understood that at all. What was the reasoning? Did he ever give reasoning? How did you understand that deal?
They felt like they wanted to stockpile draft picks. Well, they get a second and a fifth rounder for Roquan when they made that trade to the Ravens, and he's had two incredible seasons for Baltimore. Like he's got, you know, near 100 all pro, 150 plus tackles, great seasons with them. They signed him to a 5-year deal. They clearly feel like he's worth it for that franchise. And so, yeah, like, you know, I don't know it off the top of my head, but was one of those second round picks they got in Roquan, was that the trade they missed up?
And with Claypool? It might have been.
Yeah.
It might have been.
Probably.
And the other counter I'd make, too, you know, Khalil Mack was already on the roster, and you traded him. He's still been productive. It's not like he was a bum. And I understand you wanted to move him to free up cap space to do a teardown and rebuild. But I think that's another thing. They kind of sold these NFL rebuilds like it's an NBA rebuild. And it's like we need to go 3-13, and we need to – it takes us 3 years – you look at all the teams that were top five in that 2002 draft. I think it was the Chargers. Who else was in that one? I think the Cardinals. Every team is like around 500 besides the Bears, of course, and in the playoff race. Like all those poor teams. In the NFL, you should be able to turn this around in 1 year. Look what Washington did. And we're acting like we need 5 years of, you know, capable. It's such a joke.
Fred, let me throw this simple question out at you. Which franchise has a higher upside today, right now, the Bulls or the Bears?
I would say probably the Bears because they have Caleb Williams and at the quarterback position, which is probably the most predictive position for success. And the Bulls really don't have that number one star. But I'd love to hear your opinion. Do you agree with that or do you disagree?
I agree with you for that very reason. I think because it's the most important position in the entire NFL, and it's not even close, and because he is got that potential to be a superstar, perennial all-pro, there's no one on the Bulls roster that I think has that potential right now to be multiple all-pro, like all NBA teams. So I think the edge goes there, but man, everything else with that organization, top to bottom, is just such a mess that they get the edge for that answer purely because of Caleb and only because of Caleb.
Can I follow up with two more questions for you then? Yes, would you prefer Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels if you could today? If you could start a team for next year.
Isn't it a little infuriating watching the Commanders have so much success with him? Like, why are other teams able to take rookie quarterbacks? I mean, even the success Atlanta is having right now.
Oh, he looked in panics. Like, looked incredible last night.
Yes, yes. And so, like, to see the success that Daniels is having in Washington. Now, the flip side of that is, would he have had the same success here at the Bears? And the answer is probably not, because the coaching staff would probably have messed him up too in that regard. And so, like, I get that sentiment. But, like, if you tell me what moves would they have made if they had not necessarily drafted, like, I would love to know the truth behind, was there an offer from Washington to trade up to number one?
Great question.
And what was that offer, right? And then they would have taken Caleb at number one, right? So then you're looking at getting Daniels, and you have another asset, another pick, another player. Like, what would that offer have been? Given those two situations, that's a really tough one.
That is a great question. I didn't even think about that. It's going to put me further and deeper into the hut with Skywalker. Yeah.
But, like, given the two players, I think Caleb still has the higher upside. But certainly the season he's had, I mean, he's going to be in the playoffs. So, like, good for Daniels, good for Washington for building it around him and the coaching staff there and the roster around him. But you look at it from our point of view, and it's like, couldn't that have been the Bears? Could that have been the Bears if it had been Daniels? Or would they have been able to do it right? I don't know.
I just have a hard time seeing. I'm going to be 100% honest, and I'm a Bears fan, and I do love Caleb Williams, but Jaden Daniels just won me a fantasy football championship. I watched every game he played this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. he was freaking awesome. And I have a hard time believing that Caleb Williams could have outperformed him this year. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be that way for the entire career. I think Caleb has a higher throwing ceiling, but man, that guy was freaking awesome this year.
Well, let me phrase it this way, Fred. Put Daniels in front of the Bears offensive line, and does he have the same success?
No, he's probably great point. In fact, he'd be running quite a bit and it would not end well, and he would be hit quite a bit. But also, do I put some of that? I do also understand the point. You know, Caleb's got to get rid of the ball a little bit more. This isn't USC anymore. Yep. It got a little quicker. Here's the last question. You know, the Bears could take in C.J. Stroud. Would you rather have C.J. Stroud than Caleb Williams?
Stroud regressed a little bit this year. I think everybody was super hyped up that he was going to be a top five quarterback in the league. He was going to be incredible. He's just not having the success this year that he had last year. But there's a larger body of work of Stroud that we've seen, and we've seen him kind of reach these really big heights. So I think given the two options, and given that there's just a 1 year difference in terms of their contracts and salaries, I'd probably go Stroud.
Man, it's a tough one. Cause I do feel like Stroud. Yeah. I mean, he was unbelievable last year. There's no doubt. I would have rather had him last year. Yeah, he has regressed this year, but he's had far worse, believe it or not. I don't even think this is possible to say, but his offensive line in the interior at the center and guard positions has been worse than the Bears, believe it or not. So, and if you're a quarterback, that is the worst place to get pressure straight up the middle. Their offensive line was I use the term abomination again. It absolutely was for the Texans. That said, they're still going to the playoffs. You know, so it's like, I don't know.
I mean, here's the reality. I mean, Stroud threw still probably will throw for nearly 4,000 yards. But his touchdown to interception ratio is not that good. But you're right. It's a good point. I would still lean Stroud with that, just because Caleb's not flawless. But I also don't put the bulk of the issues that the Bears offense has had on him. But he's had a lot of weapons. Like, the other argument is, you would argue that the weapons, the receiving core that the Bears have, is better than the Texans receiving core.
No doubt.
So I'm still on Twitter/X. The username's a little bit different. It's now Kevin_RossVideo. That is the company I work for, which makes hardware and software for networks and teams all around the world. And the new job's going really good for me. I've been to Atlanta 3 times in the last 2 months, working with the Turner Sports people, because they are using, Piero, which is a high-end telestrator, graphics telestration system that my company makes, that I'm one of the trainers for. So I've been training their staff on how to use this system. So I've been able to go a lot of really cool places. But I still share my Bulls thoughts and stats and things I notice. That's the best place on Twitter. And then on the occasional Bullseye podcast appearance as well.
Love you, brother. Thank you so much for joining the Big Red Bus today as we pull it in. Let's go, Bulls.
Thanks, Fred. Go, Bulls.